Dear Dhamma friends, we are back in the mindfulness for young adult session. Actually, we were discussing Kagga Visana Sutta, which is one interesting sutta available in Kuddaka Nikaya. And Kuddaka Nikaya has around 15 books, and they are one of the very important books is called Sutta Nipata. So very interesting suttas like Mangala Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta. All these suttas are included in this Sutta Nipata, and it is believed that one of the ancient books of the Buddhism is this Sutta Nipata book. And again, Buddha himself has referred certain suttas which he has preached available in this area in certain other suttas. Say, for example, in Anguttara Nikaya, Majje Sutta. So Buddha refers to a certain sutta explained in the Sutta Nipata. So likewise, you can understand Sutta Nipata is one of the very important books, a section which contains early Buddhist teachings. Now, particularly this Kagga Visana Sutta explains secluded practice, how one is interested in seclusion and continue one's practice by one's own. And therefore, it is attributed to Pacheka Buddhas, and it is mentioned that a person is practicing alone and he is self-enlightened and he become a Pacheka Buddha, and then he utters a certain verse as a kind of a description about his attainment or how he has attained or what is the approximate causes for him to come to the path. So likewise, some interesting points are highlighted in this Kagga Visana Sutta. The point or the simile given is a rhinoceros horn. So when consider the rhinoceros horn, it is quite strong and a single horn. There may be other animals who are having horns, but they may have several horns together as a group. But if we consider a rhinoceros horn, it is a single powerful horn. So therefore, the behavior of a practitioner is sometimes referred to a rhinoceros horn, so that one is determined to attain what is achievable or what is necessary to attain, and was able to fulfill one's objective. So that's sort of a determination, resolution, and secluded practice is indicated in throughout this sutta. And today we are coming to the next verse, and it is going like this. Okkitta chakku na padalolo guttindriyo rakkita manusano rakkita manasano anavassuto aparidaiha mano eko chare kagga visana kappo. So before we go into the explanation about this verse, so let's go to the story behind the verse. So according to the commentary, so there is one king called Brahmadatta, and he is particularly named as Chakkulola Brahmadatta. So Chakkulola is a term for roaming eyes. So he is looking here and there. He is quite fond of beautiful sights. And not only that, he is quite fascinated with dancers. You know, in the good old days when a king is there, to him there are many dancers, and so he is enjoying. So these dancers are constantly trying to please the king by making different dances. Maybe making different songs and music, etc. So therefore, this is a kind of an entertainment related king. So he is quite fond of this entertainment. And his eyes is always looking for something beautiful. So there were many dancers he had. So we can say those are especially the female dancers. And so this king is quite lustfully enjoying them. So again and again looking at them, and so His eyes are quite involved in them. So lust is arising, and so this king was burning with lust. So he is now more into the sensual pleasures, especially through eyes. So he is enjoying. Nowadays also it is not difficult to understand, people are quite using their eyes to enjoy. So one of the very strong way of enjoyment is through our eyes. So that is why millions of dollars are being used to make different films, cinemas, because they are making such beautiful cinemas, stories, films, so that because people are quite fond of enjoying, so they spend hours, or even without sleeping, they spend hours enjoying these various films. And they may go even to a far country to see a scenery. So likewise, enjoyment that people are deriving through eyes is quite predominant, and this is one of the important faculty, by the way, we have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. So these are six faculties that Buddha mentioned. Among them, in a way we can say one of the difficult faculty to tackle is our eyes. So either we are enjoying various lustful sceneries, or we are enjoying various excitement, adventures, or maybe some sort of beautiful sceneries, or even sometimes we may enjoy reading and watching news, sports, etc., etc. So through our eyes, so we are trying to satisfy our mind. So this king is also someone like that. So he is using his eyes constantly to enjoy himself, to satisfy himself. One day there's an interesting situation happen. There is the chief landlord of the country, and he had a beautiful wife, and she too came somehow to see the dancers. So this king was enjoying looking at these dancers. One of the prestigious woman, landlord's wife, also has come to see that. Now king has seen this landlord's wife. Now all of a sudden, king forgot about those dancers, but the beauty of, or the attraction of this landlord's wife has caught his eyes. Now king was watching to this landlord's wife, and he is somewhat obsessed with lust. He started to burning with lust towards this landlord's wife. Now these things can happen. I mean, suppose that someone is going on on a road, or maybe driving a vehicle, maybe driving on traveling by a bus. All of a sudden, maybe a beautiful woman getting up, and probably our eyes may get caught to that sight. So we may start to sort of think about her, start to looking at her more and more closely. And Buddha mentioned, chakkuna rupan disva nimittaggahi adu vyanjanaggahi. So when one sees something through eyes, so they simply does not stop there. So they start to look at various signs available, various beautiful marks available. So what are the things to enjoy? So our mind get attracted to those different marks, signs, beauty, etc. And now mind is fully involved in that sight. So same thing happened to this king. Now, by the way, fortunately, this king got a striking idea. So now I am enjoying this woman's sight. Now my mind is burning. What is going to happen to me if I am continuing like this? I have so many dancers. They, I can say, belong to the palace, to me. Fine, I can enjoy them. But now I am looking at someone else's wife. Now I am trying to enjoy her. What's going to happen to me if I continue like this? Now this kind of an idea has struck his mind. Now in a way we can see it's kind of a danger is realized by the king. Now, all of a sudden, he got this idea, what if going to happen if I am continuing this kind of a behavior? It's true that I am a king. I may even kill this landlord and get this wife. But what I am going to do? Am I going to continue a wholesome life like this? Now he got some sort of an insight of his own character, of his own way of behavior. So this is some sort of a self-realization or kind of a eye-opening situation. Now the king is reflecting onto himself. Now he is advising to himself. So if I am continuing like this, definitely I will be in great trouble, because I am not restraining my eyes. I am not restraining my faculties. I am continuously burning with lust. Again and again, I am using my eyes to satisfy my desires. So if I continue like this, definitely I have to be born again in the hell realm. So this would be the result. Now he got kind of an urgency to practice. Now this kind of a situation, somewhat similar situation, has happened one of the monks called Nagasamala. So during the Buddha's time, there were many different types of arahants. So there is one monk called Venerable Nagasamala. Now he was going on alms round. You know, they are in the morning. So monks are used to go on alms round. So this Venerable Nagasamala saw people have gathered to a particular place. And he too was wondering what is going on there. Now he little get closer to that place, and now he is little curious about what is going on. Then he understood people have gathered and they are sort of making lot of big noise, and they are showing their happiness because there is one dancing woman is showing a particular dance. Now rather than lust being aroused in this particular monk's mind, he understood the danger of this sight. Like the king ultimately understood the danger of this kind of a situation, this kind of a behavior, this venerable monk also understood now how many people are increasing their lust in their mind because of this kind of a dance. So this woman is dancing and people are quite happy and enjoying that dance. Because of this kind of a situation, how much lust is increasing in their minds? So this is the danger that Venerable Nagasamala understood, and immediately he was able to enhance his understanding, release his mind, and it is said that he attained arahantship because of that. So you can see even the kind of a dangerous or vicious kind of a sight, one can turn to a advantageous or beneficial kind of a insight. Here also king definitely had previous experiences, definitely had sort of previous paramis, we can say, and so he was thinking differently. So if I continue this kind of a behavior as a king with this kind of burning lust, ultimately I will be reborn in hell. So better I correct myself. Now he is advising to himself. And now he left the palace. And then he started to practice alone. And then he became a Paccheka Buddha. After he became a Paccheka Buddha, now he is explaining his realization. So how he has realized, or how he explained his realization, is represented in this verse. Okkita chakku na nacha pada lolo. Now he is talking complete opposite of what he has done, in the sense that he was enjoying his senses and he was with roaming eyes, but once he decided that he had to restrain himself, he want to practice diligently, from that point onwards he has restrained his mind, his faculties, and that is what represented as a path, as a mechanism, which he has used to fulfill his Paccheka Buddhahood. So that is the path that he is explaining in this verse. Okkitta chakku. Okkitta chakku is the where one is maintaining downcast eyes. Rather than looking at here and there, enjoying various sights and scenes, now one is restraining one's eyes and he is with downcast eyes. So that is called okkitta chakku. Nacha pada lolo. So he is not interested on traveling to here and there in search of happiness. Typically, people, when they have a car, whatever, a vehicle, so they get together and they go on a long distance for the enjoyment. Going to a park, going to the beach, going to see something, a musical show, whatever it is. So they like to travel for the sake of enjoyment. So this is the typical nature. So we are sort of going after various different kind of pleasures. One of the pleasures is to go on a picnic, go on a kind of enjoying a trip so that we can have some fun. So this is the typical approach. But now the Paccheka Buddha is explaining that how he has restrained himself. Definitely he, being the king, he has traveled long distance to enjoy himself because he was termed as roaming eyes. So he has definitely gone to a long distance to see beautiful sights and scenes. But now, after he started practice, now he is restraining himself. And Guttindriyo, Rakkita Manasanu. Rakkita Manasanu Guttindriyo. So Guttindriyo, Gutta Indriyo, basically the protected faculties. So as I mentioned, there are mainly five faculties: eyes, ears, nose, tongue and body. So those faculties have to be protected. Even though we have healthy faculties, it doesn't mean we are using them in a way which is really harmful to ourselves. There are various sites available, various movies available. There may be various different things available. Are we going to see all this? Are we allowing our children to watch all this? So this is something that we can question. So if when we are seeing something, if it causes us to burn with lust, when we are seeing something, if it causes anger to burn ourselves, so then it is not something suitable to see. So therefore, Buddha recommend, instead of gratifying senses, Buddha recommend to some extent, guard the senses, restrain the senses. Chakkuna rupan disva na nimittaggahi, nanu byanjanaggahi. So that is how he explained. So when one sees something through their eyes, he is now trying to restrain his mind not to take too much detail, not to look at too closely, not to look at it passionately, to have some sort of a restraint. Similarly, through ears, eyes, nose, tongue and body. So when we allow these faculties to behave as they wish, or we allow these faculties to sort of gratify the senses and to obsess with lust and anger, all these things, so we are not guarding them. So therefore, this Paccheka Buddha recommends Guttindriyo. So we got to guard the senses. We should know for what purpose we are using our eyes, for what purpose we are using our ears, for what purpose we are using our nose, tongue, body. And ultimately, Rakkita Manasanu. So we got to particularly protect the mind. So because even though we are having other five senses, ultimately the mind is the one going to suffer a lot. Whatever we see does not stay at our eyes. Once we close our eyes, that's gone. But whatever the information or certain signs, marks, those may be provocating different defilements, are going to store in our mind. That is what sometimes we can call as sanya anusaya. So different things that we have seen, heard, smell, taste, and cognized or known. So those certain parts of those sense informations going to stay or going to store in our mind. So if those are quite unwholesome and quite disturbing, ultimately we are suffering. So when we go back home or when we are alone, so all those unnecessary information coming and bothering us, coming to the surface of the mind and reminding us again, even though we have finished looking at them, still we get the signs of what we have seen. Now we are giving some value to it. Now we are making them important. We are attributing a person to it. Now it is growing and growing, and ultimately it becomes a mental proliferation, papancha, and we get trapped in it. And in that way we are strengthening all these defilements. In that way we are strengthening all the habitual tendencies and no escape from samsara. But the other hand, on the opposite, so this Paccheka Buddha mentioned, one is guarding one's faculties and one is particularly guarding one's mind. Anavasuto apariya daihamano. So as a result of such kind of a practice, now he is not burning himself, unpolluted. Now his mind is unpolluted. He is able to maintain a clear mind. He is able to maintain a pure mind. And not feverish with passion. His mind is not burning with lust. His mind is not burning with anger. And his mind is not too much entangled, not confused, but was able to enjoy peace of mind, clarity of mind. So that's clarity of mind, peace of mind, kind of, we can say, tranquility of mind, is something that Buddha always recommended, which is always encouraged. Because our minds are the ones taking us either to the hell realm or to the heavenly realms, or even to the Nibbana. So we have different things. We may have our wife, children, husband, school, vehicles, occupation, different things. And actually our mind is making the main decision either to go to the hell realm or to the heavenly realm or to attain Nibbana. Therefore, if one is not concerned about guarding faculties, if we simply allow our faculties to behave as they wish, so then it is very difficult to restrain the mind. It's very difficult to tame the mind, because constantly we are kind of polluting the mind. Different sense faculties are there. Through these sense faculties, we are watching some unnecessary things, vicious things, and ultimately that causes to burn the mind, pollute the mind. So we can never purify the mind in that sense. It is very much like we are trying to purify the mind while watching all these unnecessary things. We can't find completion, because again and again we are polluting, and on another high end we are trying to purify. So these things does not go in line. So if we want to purify our mind, we have to guard the mind. We have to guard other senses, sense faculties as well. Then there's a higher possibility. Okay, we can come to an end. We can come to a completion. So there's a beautiful simile. I can remember most venerable Kadavadvaya Jinavansa Mahathero has mentioned. So suppose that you are going by a boat on a river, and at that time, due to some reason, suppose that there's a hole being generated on the bottom. Now water start to coming in. So what one approach one can do is to try to remove this water as it is coming in as much as possible. Another option is remove this water plus avoid further coming in this water. You can keep your leg, or you can keep your hand, or you can use another mechanism to stop coming in. And you are removing what is already there. So which is the best solution? So we can of course understand the second is the best solution, because if we simply only do this removing part while allowing further water to come in, we can never win the situation. But on the other hand, we stop further coming in of water, inflow of the water, and now we are trying hard to remove what already has come in, then of course we can understand, okay, once we remove the already accumulated water, then ultimately we can completely maintain kind of a safe travel, because we are not allowing water to further come in. So the sense restraint is something like that. According to Jinavansa Mahathera, sense restraint is something like that, where you are not further polluting the mind through the senses. What is already polluted, you are working out. You are using various inside knowledges, your different practices, behavioral changes, further development of the mind, different techniques you are using to purify the mind, which is already polluted. Now you are purifying it slowly, carefully, and not allowing the mind to further pollute through the senses. So that is the advisable, or that is the most wise approach. So therefore, we have to think in many different ways when we are going through our spiritual path, because if we simply allow mind and other faculties to behave as they wish, so constantly sometimes they are bringing us or carrying us to various wrong directions. So we have to be vigilant what these faculties are providing us, what we are looking at, what we are hearing, etc. So if we are sort of guarding our faculties, if we are able to protect our senses, then of course we can say, okay, for a considerable period of time, mind is peaceful, because no lust to burn it, no anger to burn it, no jealousy or any other, say, defilement to burn it. As much as possible, we are maintaining very conducive environment for the mind to have a healthy and a pure state. So that actually helps. So therefore, Buddha highly recommend this guarding of the senses. And again, not only that, to maintain an unpolluted mind, a mind which is not feverish with passion. So while maintaining that, then as the last statement, this Pacheka Buddha mentioned, Eko Chare Kagga Visana Kappo, one should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. That is the repeated phrase every verse is having, that highlighted the secluded practice. Anyway, important thing is that different points highlighted in this verse. One thing is that one is guarding one's eye faculty by maintaining a downcast gaze, and again not enjoying with too much traveling and all sort of engagement with so many other people, and again guarding one's faculties and protecting the mind. That way one is capable of maintaining a fairly pure state of mind. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I can open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bhante, currently there are six questions. Question number one, walking mindfulness. Dear Bhante, can you explain how one should observe the elemental characteristics in the walking practice? During the walking, I focus on the sensations of the sole of the foot, and I observe how the weight transfers along the sole. Sometimes I feel the cold and hot nature of parts of the soul, etc. But I never exclusively focus on these elements. Instead, the observations on the soul go blurred in general, and the mind becomes calm and relaxed and gets into an automatic walking mode. However, in the sitting practice, once the breath fades away, I always get to the hard or soft nature, cold or hot patches in the body, and spend time observing the nature of these elemental characteristics. I feel the walking and sitting are not following a similar path. Thus the question. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, in walking also, so once your mind is developed with a fair amount of mindfulness and clear comprehension, able to precisely understand what is going on. So there are, even in the walking, you can understand very subtle aspects. Say, for example, in breathing, in sitting meditation, if you are able to understand whether it is the long breath or short breath, whether it is the beginning, the middle, the end of in-breath, whether it is the beginning, the middle, or the end of the out-breath. So that indicates very precise recognition of different minor characteristics or subtle characteristics. Or on other terms, we can say you have developed very good clear comprehension, satisampajanya. So once you have that kind of precise recognition of different characteristics, the same skill can be applied while you practice walking meditation. So while walking, what are the things that are we going through? At the beginning, we didn't go through to detail. At the beginning, we simply used our touching sensation. The whole foot is very much like touching the ground, and probably even we have used a term like left, right, lifting, moving, placing, whatever it is, so that our mindfulness is improved. So we simply use that as a mechanism. But later, once the mindfulness is established, so we should not stop there. We have to retrieve minor information. That is where that clear comprehension is important. So we already have the skill to recognize the subtle aspects of the breath. How about using that same skill to recognize very subtle aspects of walking? So you can understand probably from how from one leg to the other leg, the weight is transferred. And when you are touching the ground by, say, left leg, is it the heel which is touching first, or whether it is the toes touching first? And once assume that, say, heels are touching first, then how are you going to feel? And what are the, how gradually that other parts of the leg, other parts of the foot touching the ground? And is it only the hardness that you feel, or are you able to feel the smoothness, or are you able to understand the heaviness of the leg? Or are you able to understand the lightness of the leg? Or are you able to understand the dryness or wetness of the floor? Or whether the heat of the floor? Or is it a kind of a cool temperature? So likewise, these subtle aspects we need to recognize. So that actually strengthen the facility or the ability to understand these subtle characteristics. Otherwise, actually, mind simply like to stay on the surface without penetrating all this detail and without trying to understand these details. So mind may simply like to stay satisfied or stay without doing anything just by being happy with mindfulness. But once we are able to be mindful, establish mindfulness, now we have to arouse clear comprehension. We have to purposely look at what is happening there. What are the different characteristics which I can recognize? At the moment, I can understand, okay, it is kind of roughness available on the floor. Other than that, what other characteristics are available? And when one understands all different types of characteristics, further one has to understand how these different characteristics are manifesting, how they are coming up and staying for a moment and then disappear. So likewise, their behavior you have to closely examine. So this is how you have to further improve clear comprehension, which actually leads to clear understanding, which actually leads to various different insights. So this is what needed in walking practice. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 7. This is mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, my sitting practice is observing the breath, and I'm quite happy with the progress, and thank you for the guidance. This question is about the sleepiness which creeps in sometimes when the breath fades away. After some effort and multiple sessions, I learned that with heightened mindfulness, vigilance, and attention, it is possible to go through this sleepiness and become wakeful again. It looks like the heightened mindfulness is consuming the sleepiness. This has been quite an effective technique for me now. I don't know if I'm overdoing it nowadays. Rather than suppressing the sleepiness which creeps in time to time, I feel like keeping it free to see how the mind reacts. Appreciate your valuable advice with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, sleepiness, actually, there may be different reasons for sleepiness. So you need to find out what is exactly the reason. So there may be even a couple of reasons. So one possibility is that that as we continue, the whatever the primary object can become refined. So previously you had some amount of gross object, but now that has become refined and refined, so that it is almost difficult to perceive. As a result of that, mind can become sleepy. On the other hand, sometimes so you are seeing things again and again, it is quite boring. As a result of that, mind can become sleepy. On the other hand, say you are practicing just after lunch, so that is of course another problem, because fair amount of energy being used for the digestion process, and we typically feel sleepy, drowsy during the just after the lunch. So that is not a good time to go for a typical sitting practice. Rather, it is better to go for a walk at that time. And on the other hand, you may be sitting on a very gloomy kind of an environment, so that is also causing some sort of drowsiness into the mind. So therefore, try to avoid these situations and find a quite open environment if possible, maybe in a garden or something. And again, if you are practicing on a room, probably you can switch on lights if it is gloomy. And again, you can drink some Ceylon tea. That is also another good thing, just before your sitting practice. So probably we can send you some green tea, Ceylon green tea if you like. And that is another thing. And even coffee would be better. And because those things actually activates the mind, and you can continue your practice. So these are the little things that I can provide you as guidance, as certain tactics, which you can try to avoid or minimize this drowsiness. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 9, general question. Dear Swami Mansa, recently I read a sutta and later listened to a Dhamma sermon on how we get impure by 10 unwholesome deeds, and how the purification happens by the opposite, the 10 wholesome deeds. With our mindfulness practice, we can expect that during the session time, there is no unwholesome acts. However, the link between practice and the wholesome acts is not clear. If we just do the practice and develop a daily practice with day-to-day mindfulness, will that be enough, or do we need to cultivate the wholesome acts on top of the practice? Is there clarification that developing mindfulness alone is enough to cultivate the 10 wholesome acts? Much merits for your clarifications. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, we can say like this. Actually, at the beginning, we can approach differently to the question. So the typical one approach is the Sila Samadhi Prajna. So you are practicing virtues, good qualities, precepts, Sila, and morality. And while developing that, you are trying to develop mind, reducing hindrances, and to have a peaceful mind. And on top of that, now you are practicing Panya, and that is the cognitive side. You are further improving your understanding. You are practicing mindfulness, practicing insight. So that is one of the popular traditional path. That is one approach. On the other hand, you start practicing mindfulness, and as you gain some amount of mindfulness, now you are trying to understand or clearly know what you being mindful. And as a result of that, now you are able to develop not just mindfulness, but clear comprehension as well. Now you have Sati Sampajanya. When one has Sati Sampajanya, Buddha mentioned, automatically the moral shame and moral dread will be available. And that leads to the restrainment of the faculties, that leads to the guarding of faculties, and in other terms, that you are now encouraging virtues, encouraging morality. And morality leads to further development of concentration, that leads to development of understanding. So likewise, another path is available. So anyway, different paths are available. And while you are continuing the path, one aspect of mindfulness is to distinguish between wrong and right. What is wrong and what is right? So our duty is to employ the right and discard the wrong. Buddha mentioned, Sati dovariko bhikkave ariyasavako savajjang pajahati anavajjang bhaveti. So he understand, okay, these are the good things. These are the good actions to do. So he encourages those good actions, good activities, and he is continuing with them. And on the other hand, he discard all the unnecessary shortcomings, his own shortcomings. Now, while we are doing this process, if we understand, okay, I am not that generous. Constantly my mind getting occupied with some sort of a miserliness, then I better remove this quality. So rather than being miserly, becoming miserly, then you should develop some amount of generosity. So then we are developing generosity. Okay, sometimes we understand, okay, I am getting constantly angry. So you understand for yourself, very humbly, that you understand, okay, I am quite short-tempered. Quickly I get angry. Now I got to correct this problem. I have to correct my fault. So I better practice metta. Now you are practicing metta meditation. Because you understood certain character issues, and accordingly you are trying to improve the positive side and to remove the negative side. So you are practicing different techniques so that you are further and further developing. So likewise, if we are able to understand our own shortcomings and accordingly practice whatever the other good things, wholesome deeds, then that is much beneficial. And on the other hand, we, as you mentioned, mindfulness is one aspect, and as mindfulness is growing, certain other spiritual qualities start to take hand in hand, or gather together, or they combine together and work as a group. So that is why when we are developing mindfulness, then the another stage we talk about faculties. It is not just one faculty, mindfulness. Rather, there are five faculties: saddha, viriya, sati, samadhi, panya. Faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. So a group is there. Similarly, that group is available as spiritual powers. Then we have seven enlightenment factors. Those are seven qualities there. And when we reach Noble Eightfold Path, another seven factors are there. So now you can see it's a kind of a group is in operation. And again, when we are practicing, we have to look about our way of living. Samma Ajiva also has to be considered. How are we living? So when our mindfulness is present and again clear understanding or right view is present, we are always trying to purify the way of living. So that's why Buddha mentioned, when it comes to Samma Ajiva, Samma Sati, Samma Vayama and Samma Ditti are actually helping. Samma Ditti helps to, Samma Sati helps to be on guard what is going on, and then Samma Ditti helps to understand whether this is the correct way of living, correct livelihood, or this is wrong, this is not acceptable. So that clear vision is given by the Samma Ditti, and then you have great effort to discard what is wrong and to practice or to involve with what is correct. So that way we can say, we may definitely start with mindfulness, but it is not going alone, but certain other factors are closely associated as we move forward.
Question number 4 of 9. This is a general question. Venerable Bante, observation on bodily sensations by qualities such as heat, etc., is unperceiving compared to pain and discomfort. Yet in Cittanupassana, how can I similarly, I'll just read it, vipassana on mental formations without naming ego, etc.? Rupa are broken down to the four components, yet chitta is not. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, you don't, actually sometimes it's difficult to understand logically how I am going to do it. But actually you can, as you move forward, these things become possible. So when we are in Kaya Anupassana, it is very difficult to understand how we continue Veda Anupassana. Again, when we are in Kaya Anupassana, it is difficult to understand how we conduct Chitta Anupassana. But when we are continuing our practice, slowly we gain those skills, and definitely then we can understand, okay, I can now practice Vedana Anupassana. I can now try Chitta Anupassana, because those necessary skills are being developed. So therefore, don't worry right now. I mean, when it comes to Chitta Anupassana, definitely you can do it. I mean, it's difficult to convince while being in the Kaya Anupassana level, because still we didn't tackle this problem. So don't worry, simply continue your practice. So when you come to Chitta Anupassana level, so you automatically look at your mind. Then you understand various gross level of defilements. Now I am having a lustful thought. Now I am having, say, angry kind of ill will thought. So likewise, the gross levels you understand. As we continue, even the subtle levels you may understand, even the minor defilements you may understand. So likewise, it's also a kind of a gradual path. First we understand easy to understandable, say, defilements, we can say, and then later we even understand the very subtle defilements, and even the positive wholesome sides is also possible to understand.
Question number 5 of 9. This is a general question. Venerable Bante, how to see objective reality, impermanence, anatta, etc., within a mental formation that may also be happening after the fact? For example, a questioning mind or an aversion would be a bit too late in the perception process of the Rupa Vedana that preceded it. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
No, actually, thing is, our mind is so fast. So even, say for example, path of purification, Visuddhi Magga, explains different stages. Actually, when our mind perceives something, or say we put it like this, suppose there is a lustful thought available. So we can be mindful about that lust. So that is one approach. And on the other hand, one can understand, okay, there is lust available. There is a mind which understands that lust is also available. So now you have come another step. So you know the knowing mind as well. So that is another level. And Visuddhi Magga mentioned you can go further. There is lust, there is knowing mind, there is another knowing mind, and there can be another knowing mind. So likewise, it can go more and more because of the speedy or the speed of the mind. It is true what you are trying to logically argue is true. If it is the same mind, how are we going to look at it? Because it's a kind of a something which has happened past, which we are trying to see. But it's not, we can't say like that. So things are happening quite quickly. So it is such skill is therefore available. Simple logical reasoning alone can't give us this sort of understanding. Rather, we got to do it and see. And on the other hand, it is not the very precise kind of this recognition which is more important. Rather, because of this recognition, we are avoiding the strengthening of defilements. Suppose there is lust available, as I mentioned in the example. Now you are able to recognize it. We can even argue, okay, there is the past lust, true, fine. But what are we going to do now? We are not promoting that lust. So as a result of that, that whatever the lust generated, whatever the lust now appearing in the mind, are not going to get enough food. We are not providing it food. As a result of that, now that particular lust going to fade away, reduce. So therefore, the observation is there. It always helps to cut off this furthering or promoting of those defilements. We are not feeding them. We are not strengthening them. As a result of that, those tendencies start to fade away. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 9, general question. Dear Bhante, I notice I'm getting more and more anxious in daily life, feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease. Just a bit of background. After living in Sydney for 10 years, I had to move to Victoria a few years ago for work. After coming here, I built a house. Things went well. But I noticed, given that we are not locals, the way people treated coloured people are different. I felt a sense of shock, and when I saw the salary variations of the same task, yet paid differently. How they managed so well to make sure coloured people cannot climb the corporate ladder, that's just the tip of it. Yet I also noticed that the whole economy is centered like that too. They get all the cream of natural food from the third world countries and promote the bad economic approaches to the third world so they can forever be poor. And when they see someone from the third world coming to these countries and well-established, they are jealous. These are real-world examples that nothing is in my control. What we think is not the reality, and end of the day, it is a huge amount of tax to live a lay life. I meant by tax, not what we pay to the government, but the tiredness is huge, and it's not worth it. With all these, I feel very disgusted about continuing a lay life. I do feel very anxious in daily life, feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease. Would you please be able to advise? Appreciate anything you say, Bhante. Much appreciation and merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
We can welcome you back to Sri Lanka. By the way, here also so many problems are available. So the situation is very similar in every country as far as we can see. So, I mean, time to time there may be sort of relaxed situations. Things are happening smoothly. But nowadays, of course, all the world is going through some difficult situation. So we have to patiently endure this situation. So we can't expect much this kind of a time period. So rather than we simply have to hang on. We simply have to endure this hardship rather than expecting too much. Even in Sri Lanka, people are expecting too much. And they always struggle, and that struggles, those strikes and all these problems further aggravate the situation. But people are, I mean, stupid as always. So they continue to do that, and they are the ones suffering. and what's going on is quite pathetic in a way. By the way, I mean, if you can understand, I mean, this is the way it is. So, and it is the way it is even in the past. And it may be in the future as well. So this is the human ignorance that we are experiencing. It is not that, say, even the poor people don't have any food or anything, but rather, as you have mentioned, rich people are sort of making much use of the resources. True. And are we simply allowing it to happen forever? Well, that is another question. Or are we going to fight against that? Is another approach. Are we going to go to the courts and file a case? Another approach. Different approaches are available. So are we able to fight through this and ultimately find an everlasting solution? That is also questionable. Because I mean, these are, I mean, the conditioned world always vulnerable. We never know what are the other disasters, calamities going to be happened. So this is the vulnerability of the conditioned world, the sensual world. This is not something peaceful to peaceful. This is not something peaceful available for forever. Things are always fluctuating. Things are always changing. So this is the typical nature of the sensual world. So if we can admit that, it doesn't mean that we feel defeated. We understand, okay, there is no end to this kind of physical, sensual world and the turmoils happen in the world. How about looking at differently, from a different perspective? How about purifying the mind, strengthening the mind, irrespective of what is happening outside? Is it possible to maintain a stable mind? So that is a different approach. So that is the approach Buddha has taken. During the Buddha's time, there are many battles. During the Buddha's time, there are people who were starved. And there are even scarcity of food. Many things have happened. Even Buddha and the Sangha went through them. Certain periods are there. Sangha, including the Buddha, didn't get enough food even to eat. There is a scarcity of food. And similarly, and his whole clan, Shakya clan, was assassinated. So this is the world. This is the sensual world. This is the human world. This is the ignorant world. So we can't fully correct this whole world. Rather, we have to take a different approach. Amidst all these turmoils, how to live peacefully? So this is something that you can investigate. Yeah.
Bhante, we have another 3 more questions, but we have time.
Okay.
Okay. Question number 7 of 9. Dear Bhante, regarding the Dhamma sermon today and the quote, "Guard the senses and protect the mind." If one develops mindfulness adequate enough, is it possible to guard the mind without any restraints? During the initial stages of practice, it will be necessary to guard the senses, but is it practical throughout the life? What are the workarounds we can adopt? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, very good point that you are highlighting. So at the beginning, of course, as you mentioned, it is necessary to guard the senses as much as possible because we are still very poor in our practice. Our faculties are not strong. Faculties in the sense mindfulness, wisdom, samadhi and all these things are not strong. Therefore, quite easily we may slip off. So as a result, so in order to avoid that, we are as much as possible protecting ourselves, guarding the senses. But as you mentioned, as we improve ourselves, so there we have some sort of a refuge building up in ourselves. So the wisdom is available, mindfulness is also available, concentration is also available. So even when mind is not guarded or the faculties are not guarded, since we have a fair amount of practice available with us, then we can quickly recover. So that is one advantage. So if I mention the example that I have given you, that Nagasamala Thera's example, so he was practicing diligently while going on arms round. What he saw is not something suitable. He saw maybe a half-naked woman dancing. But because of his practice, he was able to divert that wrong vision to something beneficial. So likewise, once we are developing our practice, so it is giving us some sort of a strength or safety so that we can move forward without much trouble. We can say so. And therefore, we can say Arahants or Buddha may not have guarded their minds because not needed, because there is no root causes for them to agitate the mind. The lust, hatred, delusion are completely removed. Therefore, no issue even if they don't guard the mind. Yeah.
Question number 8 of 9. This is general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, I'm experiencing fear, fearful thoughts. I know it's a thought, but I want to apply the theory you mentioned on the boat with the water leak. Would you please help with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, different approaches may be available. So when we feel fearful, so one approach is to face it. But in order to face it, we need some amount of strength of the mind, some amount of developed mindfulness. Otherwise, we can't face it. But till that we gain that mindfulness, till that we gain that strength, we better avoid that whatever the fear. So that is one approach. So, I mean, you can talk with another person, you can go for a counseling session, etc. And you can talk and you can share your, say, causes. You can try to understand, try to analyze what is really going on. That also really helps. And as you mentioned, so till we developed that to that level, in order to face the situation, to confront the situation, we better avoid the situation and develop ourselves. Like when we are going for a war, it is not that we are immediately going to the war. Rather, we have to go for a training and we have to use different techniques. And then once we are successful, probably we can go for a fight. So something like that.
Question number 9. This is the last one. Actually, it's about that Venerable Sobhaka.
I don't know,
Bhante, you had a chance.
Yeah. So I found some information regarding Venerable Sobhaka. Let me show that. So there is one book called Apadana, Thera Apadana, Kuddaka Nikaya Apadana Pali. So there is one sutta called Sobhaka Thera Apadana. So in this, actually, it is mentioned the past lives of Venerable Sobhaka, what are the good deeds he did in order to have quick enlightenment during his childhood. So at the age of 7, he became an arahant, and this sutta explained the history of Venerable Sobhaka. So it is mentioned that one day he was cleaning one of the caves in the forest. At that time, the Buddha Siddhartha has approached him. So there are many Buddhas before our Buddha, the Buddha Gautama, and one of that Buddha is called Buddha Siddhartha. So he approached this person who was cleaning that cave. And then once he saw that Buddha Siddhartha, he prepared and he offered that seat to the Buddha. And then Buddha, while seated on that seat, saw the mind of Venerable Sopaka, and this time kind of a lay person, and he mentioned about the impermanence. So Buddha Siddhartha has uttered a verse, Anicchavata Sankhara Uppadavaya Dhammino Uppajjitva Nirujjanti Te Sang Vupa Samosuko. So Buddha has mentioned all the conditioned phenomena are impermanent, and they have the nature of arising and passing away. So they arise and then pass away, and ceasing of all these, the calming down of all these, stilling of all these formations, that is the sukha, that is the happiness. So this insightful verse, this Buddha Siddhartha has taught me, or has mentioned. Then he left the... Then this particular person has left previous beliefs, and he became practicing this Anicca Sanya, understanding impermanence of everything. So he has developed that Anicca Sanya for one day. Ek dinak bhavana kota mama ein chutavimi. Due to some reason that he passed away from that life, and he was able to practice impermanence for one day. And then he was traveling through the samsara in many different lifespans, and in this time actually he came to this Chandala clan, we can say a little bit of lower clan, and he was named as Sopaka. And then you know the story that the Buddha came and helped him, and then he mentioned that while the Buddha approached me, and he asked certain questions, and I have given the correct answers, and that was my upasampada, high ordination. At the age of 7 years, I was able to become an arahant. So this is what mentioned in this sutta.
That's the last of the questions for today, and we've gone over time, so I'll finish up very quickly. Firstly, I'd like to thank Bhante and pass on our appreciation and merits. Also to the people seen and unseen working behind to make this program a success. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, this would not go ahead. With that, I'd like to end the program. Theravan Sarnai.
Yeah, Theravan Sarnai.